2239.
Hello, John?
Dorothy, good morning.
Oh, you're all right. Are you all right?
Yes.
I'm so relieved to hear your voice. After the bombs last night.
Were there bombs last night? I hadn't noticed.
Don't tease me. I've been worried sick about you. Was it awful?
Mostly awful, with occasional reprieves when it was purely terrifying.
Do be serious. Did you get to a shelter?
We were far too busy for that. A bomb crashed through the roof of Mr. Bannon's house, number 14, and blew him and his sofa through the front window and onto the street.
No!
Apart from a few scratches, he was right as rain. Which is more than I can say for Mrs. Postlethwaite, number 22. She was... well, it was... didn't think the bombs would stop falling. They kept coming and coming. The gas mains were hit and a fire started in the old warehouse. While the brigade tried to get that under control, more bombs fell on the trucks and then...
Oh, darling, you're so brave.
Brave? Only if bravery involves shaking knees, sweaty palms, dry mouth and a comical, wild-eyed expression.
I do love you, you know.
Do you?
You know I do.
Shall we meet at the lake tomorrow? I'm on duty again tonight, but by midday...
Yes, of course. Tomorrow.
Well?
I don't know what to say.
I sometimes wonder whether you think you've been sent into the world for your own amusement.
No, sir. Actually, I...
Your patient's behavior during the air raid was... the worst possible.
Yes, well...
He has been very frightened and he thinks himself a great coward and therefore feels no pride. But he has done everything his duty demanded and perhaps a bit more. And you, Wormwood, against all this disaster, all you can produce on the credit side is a burst of ill temper with a dog that tripped him up, some excessive cigarette smoking, and the forgetting of a bra!
You weren't there. You couldn't understand what I was up against.
Don't whine to me about your difficulties. If you are proceeding on the enemy's idea of justice, then I am not sure that a charge of heresy does not lie against you. At any rate, you will soon find that the justice of hell is purely realistic and concerned only with results. Bring us back food, or be food yourself!
Yes, Uncle. But I still expect good results from his fatigue. You heard how tired he was.
Well, that is well enough. But it won't fall into your hands. Fatigue can produce extreme gentleness and quiet of mind and even something like vision. If you have often seen men led by it into anger, malice, and impatience, that is because those men have had efficient tempters.
Oh, right.
The paradoxical thing is that moderate fatigue is better soil for irritability than absolute exhaustion. This depends partly on physical causes, but partly on something else. It is not fatigue simply as such that produces the anger, but unexpected demands on a man already tired. Whatever men expect, they soon come to think that they have a right to it. The sense of disappointment can, with very little skill on our part, be turned into a sense of injury. It is after men have given in to the irremediable, after they have despaired of relief and ceased to think even half an hour ahead, that the dangers of humbled and gentle weariness begin. To produce the best results from the patient's fatigue, therefore, you must feed him with false hopes. Put into his mind plausible reasons for believing that the air raid will not be repeated. Keep him comforting himself with the thought of how much he will enjoy his bed next night. Exaggerate the weariness by making him think it will soon be over. for men usually feel that a strain could have been endured no longer at the very moment when it is ending, or when they think it is ending. In this, as in the problem of cowardice, the thing to avoid is the total commitment.
Total commitment?
Whatever he says, let his inner resolution be not to bear whatever actually comes to him, but to bear it for a reasonable period. And let the reasonable period be shorter than the trial is likely to last. It need not be much shorter, though. In attacks on patience, chastity, and fortitude, the fun is to make the man yield just when, had he but known it, relief was almost in sight.
As you heard, he is planning to meet the girl. When he does, I could make full use of the fact that fatigue makes women talk more and men talk less. I could see to it that she really annoys him.
Yes, well, yeah, that is something. Work it out with Slumtrimbit.
And I could use his experiences during the bombing for an intellectual attack on his faith.
I'm afraid your previous failures have put that out of your power. But there is a sort of attack on the emotions which can still be tried.
Yes?
You must help him to feel. When first he sees human remains plastered on a wall, that this is what the world is really like, and that all his religion has been a fantasy. You will notice that we've got them completely fogged about the meaning of the word real. Of some great spiritual experience, they tell each other, all that really happened was that you heard some music in a lighted building. Here, real means the bare physical facts, separated from other elements in the experience they actually had. On the other hand, they will also say, it's all very well discussing that high dive as you sit here in an armchair, but wait till you get up there and see what it's really like. Here, real is being used in the opposite sense, to mean not the physical facts, which they know already while discussing the matter in armchairs, but the emotional effect those facts will have on a human consciousness. Either application of the word could be defended, but our business is to keep the two going at once, so that the emotional value of the word real can be placed now on one side of the account, now on the other, as it happens to suit us.
You mean, for example, how in birth the blood and pain are real, but the rejoicing is a mere subjective point of view, or in death the terror and ugliness reveal what death really means?
That's right! Wars and poverty are really horrible. Peace and plenty are mere physical facts about which men happen to have certain sentiments. The creatures are always accusing one another of wanting to eat the cake and have it, but thanks to our labors, they are more often in the predicament of paying for the cake and not eating it. Your patient, properly handled, will have no difficulty in regarding his emotion at the sight of human entrails as a revelation of reality, and his emotion at the sight of happy children or fair weather as mere sentiment.
Yes, yes, perfect.
I hope you understand the distinction, Wormwood. You had better. This is your last chance, and I do mean the last. If you fail, our next meeting will not be so pleasant. Well, not for you.
Yes, Uncle.